Yo, 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 what's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to yet again another fantastic indie creator interview. It's your Cape Crusader Cody, and we are keeping it geekly with our new friend Chris O'Hara of Bent Box Comics, here to break down Welcome to Artificial and everything in between. And it is our official 250th episode today, so hell yeah, welcome to the show. How are you doing today, Chris?
Doing good. That was a hell of an intro. I haven't memorized that.
I've done it a lot, so
yeah. That was good. No, I'm doing great. Glad to be here. It's super, super awesome you're having me, and I love everything you do, and making sure all the indie creators out there have a voice and get out there. So I've been watching some of your live streams and some of your interviews, and I was like, I gotta jump on that.
Appreciate it, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
I had the opportunity to read Artificial, and holy crap, I loved every bit of it. We were talking backstage about it. We're going to actually be deep diving into some of these interiors without the letters too. So an awesome, you know, opportunity. This is kind of an exclusive look. So really appreciate that as well. But before we dive into that, let's begin with who you are and how you got into creating comics.
sorry. So real quick, everyone, I'm a little sick. So excuse all the coughs and the ahems. But so I got into comics actually very, very, very young. So I'll try and make this story a little short. But my father used to ink for Marvel.
Wow.
I don't really mention it very often, and you'll understand why in a minute. But so my father used to ink for Marvel a long time ago. And I actually had a mural. He did a mural on my room, in my bedroom, of Spider-Man on one side and all of the villains. I mean, not all the villains, but you know, the main ones, Kingpin and everything. And it just to a T what you would expect from the comic books. And it was so amazing.
So jealous.
So it was really cool having that growing up. And he collected comic books since he was a young kid with his dad. And I remember we once went through and looked through some of his issue ones. He probably had maybe $200,000 worth of comics by the time. Wow. We had one of those like things you can go through and look through each and every value, and it took mm-hmm. us like a couple weeks. So he got me into comics, and I used to read a lot as a kid. And when I was 7 years old, he bailed. So he did the super cool dad thing of going out and getting a pack of cigarettes and not coming back. It is what it is. But at seven, I used to draw all the time. Mm-hmm. I used to do caricatures. I toot my own horn. I got really good at it because I practiced and I learned from him. After he left, I dropped everything. Subconsciously, maybe I don't want anything to do with that anymore. Maybe. But I stopped drawing. I stopped collecting comic books, stopped reading them. I like stopped everything. And then around age maybe 25, I got back into drawing, got back into reading comic books, got back into it. And then ironically enough, you had him on your podcast not that long ago, John Schell. Mm-hmm. He recently did a rebrand called Unity Comics, but he started doing his own thing. And I've always been a very creative person. I'm searching for creative outlets all the time, and my brain won't shut up. So I saw his, and I was like, this is incredible. This is awesome. It's like, this is possible. So I, not to steal his steam, but I kind of jumped on the bandwagon, and I was like, all right, I'm going to make a comic. And so I kind of got back into it, but it was a long time coming.
You know, basically. It's hilarious you're saying this. Chris can't see the chat, but we have Dr. Hino419 saying good morning. Good morning to you as well. Welcome to the stream. Morning. And then we actually have Unity Comics in the chat as well, saying, I can't wait for this book. So that's hilarious that you're giving him a shout out. And he's right in here saying he can't wait for your book either. So
you better watch. I watched yours. You better watch.
Man, so holy crap. I was rooting for your dad so freaking hard when you're like, he did that. I was like, dude, I am so jealous. I would love that. And then boom,
it was amazing. But the worst part of it was, is when I say the word used to, he used to ink. He got a little too big for his britches and got that pride boiled up in him. And what he did was he presented to some of his bosses this personal inked comic of his own. He wrote a comic. He inked, I think, about 15 pages. And back then, it's your hand, it's hand inked, you know? Mm-hmm. So he, and I remember seeing it, he pulled it out of his closet. It's this big, you know, it's like 3 feet. And he would go page by page and show me. It was like this space. I'm trying to remember it, but I remember it had like laser guns and, you know, I was super young, but I was blown away. And basically what happened was they said, it needs more work. And you know what he said? I quit. That blew my mind. I was like, bro, that was a bad call. I was like, you got a lot of bad calls in front of you too, but that was a bad call. And so that's kind of the unfortunate thing, but he was insanely talented.
So Unity Comics, they were your inspiration for jumping back into comics?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, like I said, I've always been very creative. I'm searching for creative outlets at all times because I actually went to Full Sail University. I don't know if you know, if you're familiar with that.
I'm not too familiar.
It's kind of like an interactive media school, but I went for game design. So I actually learned how to make video games.
Oh, that's awesome.
That was my first passion, was that. So I actually opened my own studio right after graduating, hired some of the other graduates, and we basically formed a team and we made a couple indie games. They're no longer on the store because of issues, but they're like endless runners, little things just to kind of get our feet wet. So that was a blast, but 99% of my game ideas were story driven, had heavy narrative aspects to them. So when I started wanting to really dive into that, the depths of that kind of an indie game, the amount of time it takes to make that and the amount of money it takes to make that is very hard to come by. I didn't have the time, you know what I mean? So I unfortunately kind of fell out. Some of the guys left, some of them. One guy got hired by 2K because of what we were doing. So he got hired at 2K. He's one of the technical artists on WWE, one of their new games. So that was really cool to see him do that, move on to that. So
that'd be getting you some free games.
No, help him. They had a producer job recently, and I was like, hey man, put a good word in for me. Like, I know how to produce. I've done it, but not successfully, but I've done it. So yeah, it was a really fun time, but moving from that, I saw that there's a potential for realizing all my creative ideas with comic books much easier than indie games. I still have a heart for indie games and making games and interactive media and telling stories that way, but I just don't have the time, energy, or money. So like I transitioned into comics. And then as I started working with my current artist, I fell in love with it. It's so much fun. Especially being able to like have an idea and then see it and then progress and then see the next page and the next page. And just, I can't wait for the next meeting to see the next page. And just that the amount of progress that I'm able to accomplish with this artist is just mind blowing. And it's so much, it's addictive. So
no, that is awesome. Real quick. Shout out to Diggs, by the way, 7 over on Twitch, stopping in to say, hey, what's up? Welcome to the stream as well, Diggs.
What's up, Diggs?
Dude, holy crap. I am loving this journey. The game development, like, every time I have talked to developers, it's always that crunch, like how much work just goes into it and just how much extensive like studying and learning on the job and just this. Do you think that helped prepare you for the world of comics?
I think so. It definitely made me, because like I said, I kind of, my main role was kind of the producer. I did the art side of it. I did UI design and stuff like that with all our indie games. But all in all, I was studio head of our little indie studio. So I would meet with the artists, the programmers, the sound design team. I would meet with everybody across time zones, different languages, you know, language barriers, stuff like that. And it was one of my favorite things to do, is just connect with people, talk with people, and be able to work with them. And it just, the incredible technology that we have now, to where, like, back to the comic, my artist is in Brazil, and just being able to work with a guy in Brazil from my office, it's amazing. And so like that, that definitely the ability to work across time zones, different people, not necessarily a crunch. And that's, I told my, mainly because of the indie game, you know, background, I told him there's no crunch on this comic. I was like, make it killer and take 10 years. I couldn't care less. I was like, I just want it good. I was like, we're not crunching. We're not doing any of that BS. So I do think it did help. And it also helped in ways that I could, you know, avoid certain traps of that type of development. So, but yeah, for sure.
We have a Dr. Hino 419. Mr. Harry, you are quite a talented man. Yeah, I got to agree. It's awesome you were able to kind of dip into both industries. I'm just here talking about it. You're actually doing it. So that is awesome. Let's give a little bit of a shout out to the creative team involved on the comic.
So the creative team is me, the writer, Chris O'Hara, and the artist, Gabriel Fonseca. I apologize, Gabriel. I always butcher your last name. I'm just a plain white and I don't do good with names. So he's awesome. But he is the only other guy. I wanted to I had the idea because obviously Unity, John Schell, and the kind of industry standard of artist or, you know, inker, colorist, letterer, and having like a 4-person team typically was my first goal, or at least not my first goal, but my first understanding of what I would need as I'm making the comic. I was like, okay, now I need a letterer. Now I need this. As I started working with Gabriel, he is so talented in everything. And I'm like on the fence of being like, everyone needs to hire this man immediately. And then also, no one hire this man. He's mine. he is mine. You don't get him.
Get away.
He's mine. I've poached him. He's mine. The end. But he's so incredibly talented. And he inked everything. And then I said, well, you're definitely coloring it. I was like, I've seen your colors. And they're beautiful. Like, I kind of... we can show it later. But there's one closer to the end of the comic because we can go panel by panel. Or page by page, that I just love the colors on. And I don't think there's much dialogue because I try to remove it from this so that there's no spoilers. We might be able to show that so you can just see some of the depth, some of the color that he puts into this. So I knew his coloring was going to be killer. And then I said, well, I mean, no offense to everyone out there. How hard could lettering be? Is what I said to him.
Oh.
As ignorant as it sounds, I'm sure. I apologize to everyone. But I said that to him. I was like, I mean, can you letter? And he said, I've never really lettered before, but I could try. And, you know, I'm trying to puff him up as much as I can because I honestly love the guy. He's so good at every, he's so talented. So I told him, I was like, just do it. Just try it. I was like, I'm sure you will do well. Based on your inking and coloring, you can do it.
And not even in his native tongue, right?
No. So there's a decent language barrier.
Yeah.
there's a handful of like idioms that I say, and he's like, come again? Or like, what? I was like, I'm sorry. Let's hold on. And I have to go back and things like that. And it's fun to work through though. And like, he's taught me a bunch of like Portuguese and stuff. And it's pretty cool. Like Sombra from Overwatch is Shadow in Portuguese. And I didn't know that. And
yeah,
we
never guessed.
He was coloring and he was doing the highlights and shadows. And of course he's doing it all in his language. And I see on the bottom left, it says Sombra. And I was like, why did you write the Overwatch character's name in the bottom left? Like the stupidest thing I could say. And he goes, and he started laughing. He said, oh, Sombra's actually Portuguese for shadow. And that's where her name came from. I was like, cool. I'm learning things. So that was really fun. But it's a ton of fun working with him. You're not going to see, obviously, the font or the text as we go through. But you'll see the lettering. The boxes and the circles and the tails and everything. And I hope you can appreciate the amount of effort and work he put into it. Glad he did it.
There was one part in particular where I wanted to be like, dude, you like, can I share this? Like the way he did this word bubble when the protagonist was shutting the door. He was like at trying to talk to him and the protagonist shuts the door and the word bubble breaks. And he's like, oh, okay. Like, And I'm like, oh my God, that was like awesome. The way he like broke the word bubble. Like, it's just, I love when they go above and beyond with like speech bubbles and things like that and breaking
panels
and such. Yeah.
That's all him. That's what I love about it. Cause I'm like, all right, here are the words, the dumb words I put down on paper that don't mean anything unless everything comes together well. And I give it to him with the language barrier. And he just killed it. There's no other way to put it. He did everything so well. If you ever had a question, he would reach out. You know, we Discord all the time, so that I'm constantly available for any questions or like, hey, I need some kind of explanation on what this word even is because I don't even know it or something like that, or why are we saying this here? And then we'll walk through it, and he goes, oh, that's really good. And I'm like, thank you. Or he'll have a suggestion where he's like, why don't we say it this way? And 9 times out of 10, it's better than what I wrote. And I'm like, yeah, dude, let's do it. And so that I gave him a ton of creative liberty with this. And I kind of said, I'm going to be as descriptive as I can when I'm writing the panels. And I was like, but if I write four panels on a page, and I'm like, and you think there should be a fifth in between, or there should be one in between two and three where the character's looking a little different or something, I was like, throw it in. I was like, let me see it. And he did in a handful of areas. And he elevated the story.
Yeah.
With the art, for sure.
No, that is awesome.
Nothing but good things to say about him.
I love hearing how good you guys work together as well. So we've talked a lot about the book, about what goes inside of the book. What's the story about? Give us a little bit of the juice of what we can expect when diving into this comic.
Okay, so it's called Artificial, which I'm really happy with that name. It's one of those dumb things where I think I tweeted it a couple, like last week, where I said, there's just something sexy about a succinct one-word title for a comic.
Mm-hmm.
And I was tooting my own horn there just because I was like rereading it. I was like, I just like that we captured it in just one word. But all that said, the main premise of the comic actually, or the main idea of the comic came up with the rise of AI art. So I'm sure your audience, you, everyone is very familiar with the discourse going around with AI art and how much it's advanced and how much people are using it or hating it or yada, yada, yada. So I had this idea for this comic when that started to rise up, and it was kind of just one of those like little nuggets of, well, how would a traditional artist like handle not, you know, a computer doing his job? And then I got into this spiral basically that led me into the story, which basically is our main character is Vincent Van Gogh. He gets mysteriously teleported to an undescript time period. It looks pretty futuristic, where AI has taken over. So I will admit that's not the most original idea in the world, but I'm really enjoying writing from the point of view of these characters that we put in. So we have Vincent Van Gogh as our main character. Our secondary character is a traditional artist named Marie Cassatt. She is kind of a contemporary of Vincent Van Gogh around the same time. She actually outlived him. And then our third character, so it's a trio, is Leonardo da Vinci. Leonardo da Vinci, I don't believe we're going to be showing much of him in today's preview because he kind of comes in towards the end. But he's kind of going to be like the crazy uncle of the group. Mm-hmm. And it's been so much fun writing him. And then the expression that our artist gave him is just so perfect. And I love this character to death. But so the main story follows these three as they're teleported to an AI controlled future. And they are requested to assist the resistance in taking back control of humanity. So that is basically it in a nutshell. I don't want to give away too much more. There's a, it kind of really kicks off on issue two where we have kind of who called the trio out. So that gets all developed. There's going to be a really amazing spread in issue two that our artist is already starting to prototype and write down and draw down that I can't wait for. And you've seen it, but it's going to be kind of from Van Gogh's the way he sees the world. We try to put that into the comic here and there, so you've seen that, and we can show a little bit of that. But that's basically it. I have the majority of the story written. There's about maybe a buffer of 8 to 12 issue possibility, you know, for the completed story. But I have kind of like the beginning, middle, and end figured out. But that's pretty much it.
Dude, I'm like, when you started like going into the depths of it, my mind was just like, because I read it and I was trying to piece together the pieces. I love to do that when I'm going through a comic. And man. So why these three in particular?
So, and this is something, if you want to pop it up, you can at some point. But this is where I don't know how much time we have, because I could actually talk for a while.
Oh, we're good. We're good.
About the backstory of this. This was not the original idea for the comic. The original idea for the comic. This came where I needed a transition point. My original idea for the comic, or for my first comic, we'll say, was, are you familiar with like Ash vs. Evil Dead? Like those, yeah, yep. That, yeah. So my original idea for the comic was that style of like this traditional artist that got teleported to this like hellscape filled with demons and monsters and zombies and all the, you know, I had that idea where it was going to be gruesome and very violent. And that was the original direction for the comic. My original OG character was Bob Ross. So he was supposed to be numero uno. And I actually wrote a full first issue, and I loved that issue. I have like this scene of him walking through the woods, singing an old 60s song. And there's like, I just loved it so much. I gave him an interaction with his pet squirrel, Peapod. And he was actually supposed to be the main protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you're familiar with Bob Ross or his estate, but it is not someone you can trifle with. So I really wanted him as the main character. And I actually wrote it all, hired Gabriel already. He already did sketches. I actually posted it in the drive for you if you want to pull it up. But there's one.
Says, actually, let me do that right now then.
I think it says like early designs.
Yeah, give me.
But
one
it second. Shows Bob Ross as and Vincent as basically the two main characters. So that was the original concept. I'll let you pull it up. But the crazy thing is I actually had to have a meeting with the Bob Ross estate to discuss my plans with this comic, which included the head of their media group and I believe his wife. And it was like this, like, I'm like, okay, I'm having this meeting. Yeah. So here it is. So Bob Ross on the left, obviously was supposed to be the main protagonist. He's supposed to be this like take on the world, super obvious, you know, it's Bob Ross. I was going to have him be Bob Ross. Super positive. Van Gogh is actually supposed to be this. I mean, he kind of is in this comic, but he's your kind of like a lackey character where he doesn't really have a lot of positivity, obviously. He's very beaten down by the world. I wanted Bob Ross to kind of, I wanted like a character development between him and Bob Ross. And that was just an interesting kind of idea because I've always liked Vincent Van Gogh. And obviously Bob Ross. So that was where I paired the two together. But this was the original design, was Bob Ross and Van Gogh.
I love how different they are too. Like how he's standing up, like, yeah, with the good guy pose, like standing up with like pride and everything. And then like, you see the weight of the world is just like, yeah, crushing him.
Yep. That's all Gabriel. So he's just writing descriptives. So he's just saying like, this is why I did this design. So this is the kind of stuff he did when we were concepting. He was just like sad eyes, bad clothes, his favorite flower on his jacket, and he just gave the characters so much. He built personality into the characters with his design, and which was stuff I didn't even tell him to do. You know what I mean? I wasn't saying like Bob Ross needs to be cheerful, up for the world, good guy pose, 70s vibe. I mean, I kind of gave those descriptives, but he just took it and created these, and I loved them. So basically, long story short, Bob Ross is not allowed to fight people. He's not allowed to be violent at all. So we had to, mid-meeting, they asked, what was the premise of the comic? And mid-meeting, I had to completely change my story. I went from demons with zombies and things like this. And I'm like, I was like, Bob Ross is going to be the leader of this group that gets sent to the future. And that's how I started. And they're like, well, what's going to be the fighting? And then they said, we can't have him killing humans. And they said that before I even like kept going with like zombies and demons and stuff, which obviously aren't like humans, but you know what I mean? They didn't like that idea. So I mid thing pretended like I had this plan the whole time. I was like, oh, well, it's robots. I was like, so he goes to the future and it's like AI and they've taken humanity's creativity away, and this group has reached into the past to grab all these creatives to bring to the future to help reset humanity. And so that ended up being the reason I continued this comic with that theme, because I actually really liked it, even though I came up with it on the fly in a panic with meeting with Bob Ross' estate.
So were you able use Bob at any point, or is that off the table?
I mean, I could, but it's like, you know what? I didn't sign any non-disclosure agreements. They didn't tell me I couldn't tell anyone this. It's like $5,000 to license his image, and then they get a percent of all sales. They have to review every comic. They have to make sure every single word out of his mouth, which I was so careful about. I like researched him. I looked into his past as in the military. I learned that he loved to sing and all this stuff. He was stationed up in Alaska, and I learned all this stuff about him, and I just researched the crap out of it just to make sure I did it right. And they said, we don't trust you to do it right every time, so we have to review it every time. We have to give you approval every time. We have to have creative liberty to change things. I was like, I'm sorry, Bob. You're out. Like, you gotta go.
It was a nice try. It was a nice try, Bob. Let me go ahead. We're really gonna switch over to the other side of the Google Drive and pull up some of these interiors to look at. I wanted to kind of close out because I didn't want to like accidentally like reveal anything. All right, so we'll pull this up over here. Man, that would have been so cool, though. I think everybody loves Bob Ross, though, right? Like, that would have been awesome. Such an awesome idea.
Well, I mean, it would have been... It felt like a cheat code. You know what I mean? To my first comic, I was like, let me just pick one of the guys with the biggest mass appeal in the art world currently. I was like, well, Bob Ross, that's going to sell. I was like, it can't not sell. It sounded arrogant and stupid at the time, but... I was like, that was the reason. And I love Bob Ross. So I was like, this would be really cool to see him in this situation. But yeah, it just fell through.
So right here, we have a look of our the trio right here. Is there any special meaning behind this binary code right here?
No, that was kind of just a last minute thing. I can give you more into that as we move on, because this was actually an ad we put out in Unity's comic, The Last Wand. So you can actually see this in there. But this was primarily just an ad, just to advertise that it's coming out. So.
And then I love this too. So we begin in France. So was this where Vincent Van Gogh's from? Is France?
Yep. France. He's not from France. He moved to France. This is another thing I did a lot of research on because when I had to switch from Bob Ross, I was like, I just learned all this useless crap about Bob Ross. I was like, okay, well, now I got to learn a bunch of useless crap about Van Gogh. But no, I love Van Gogh, and I knew a lot about him originally, but I had to kind of figure out like the languages he speaks, where he came from, his history, his background. So this is technically the historic house, the Yellow House. This is where he stayed, which is that's why it's kind of featured in this page. But yeah, that's just the focal point there. So this will be kind of fun. So he's got a very famous painting, Cafe Terrace at Night. That's one of his more famous paintings. This is a scene of him painting that. So that's kind of where I wanted to introduce Vincent, is just in his element doing what he does. But if you click back on that, you'll see that, I don't know if anyone will remember from the live stream, but the handsome gentleman on the left is John Schell from Unity Comics.
Oh, that's awesome, dude. I see it now. That is so cool.
Yeah, so that's him. That's his wife next to him. And one of my good buddies, Clifford, is the other guy. So
that is awesome, dude. Holy crap.
Yeah, like our artist is going to show up sometimes, that I want to make sure you're in the comic. you know, I really like Easter eggs and just quirky little things. And I'm like, if we're going to have NPCs, why not have them be people I know? I mean, it'd be easier to design them.
Dude, that is so, that's cool. I didn't know, notice that first, but when you said it, I recognized, I was like, holy crap. That's so, what do you say when you showed them?
That's cool. I mean, we have that kind of back and forth, yeah. But I was like, I'm putting you in the comic. He's like, oh, cool. All right. And then I showed him, same with Cliff, but yeah. So this is just him, painting. I wanted to show, you know, his, focus, that's kind of, I love that panel on the left there, which is, it looks so close. And my artist even said, he's like, I almost try to just take down, you know, Cafe Terrace at night and try and make it look like it fits in the panel. Mm-hmm. But he's like, it just didn't work. He's like, so I just did it myself. So that's him recreating Van Gogh's art style to show one of the brush strokes.
I was going to say, your artist was phenomenal, not only with his style, but just replicating Van Gogh's as well.
It's so impressive. No joke.
And right there, we get a little bit better of a glimpse of the painting in the background, too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I just love just like how dreary and worn down he looks, you know, as he's eating and painting.
Yeah, so obviously I removed everything so you can't get much of the story, but like there was a little discussion or altercation there. So it's back to him just being alone in the world, which is kind of what the beginning of the comic shows. Excuse me, the left image, the left panel of him dreary on the chair, and this is going to be another theme. I said, let's put as much historical art into this comic as we can. So that is actually a very close recreation of one of Vincent van Gogh's paintings where it's him in a chair, like dreary and sad. I think let me see if I remember what it's called. It's called At Eternity's Gate. So that is something he painted of himself. And I said,
so I'm not very knowledgeable with his work. So if you have Easter eggs, feel free to shout them out. Cause that's so much cool that there's so many different layers to this like that.
Yeah. And then once again, that's the artist. I didn't tell him, hey, let's put a... I mean, after he threw this in, I was like, let's do that more. I was like, because I love that idea.
More of
but
that.
Because I had a slightly different description for this panel. And he said, well, he's like, if you remember, Vincent van Gogh painted this painting of him sad in a chair. He's like, so I just used that as reference. And I was like, I mean, that's genius. Thank you for being a genius and making me look stupid. But I was like, do it. It's killer.
And then I love this so much. Like,
so this is him standing up, kind of heading home after a long night of painting, looking up at the sky, which is one of his favorite things to do, he said. And so we kind of gave it that night sky, you know, I'm sure everyone's familiar with his painting. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to give a visual representation of how he sees the world. And we're not going to do it very often, but basically in really highlighted moments, we're going to just see it through his eyes. And once again, our artist, Gabriel, found this to be very daunting. And I was like, can you paint Starry Night? You know what I mean? I was like, can you show us Vincent van Gogh's view of the world in your art style, but in his art style? Does that make sense? Can we do some inception work here?
Yeah.
And my artist is like, okay. And then he did it. And I was like, dude, you did it. And this is another reason why he lettered the comic. I was like, you can do everything I ask. I was like, you are so talented. So I, once again, can't say enough. And I do really love the, this is a snap back to reality situation there where he's kind of drawn back down from that view and we have it tailing off over his shoulder. And I love his, once again, Gabriel's, like sound effects design that he put in here of like, pasting it on the area that it's going to be, so like click of the door of the unlock. It's great. I'll show you another Easter egg in a second.
Right here is the one I was talking about earlier. I didn't explore this, so we'll get into that in just a few seconds.
For
but
sure.
Right here, where he's like this speech bubble, how it breaks, and then the slam. I love this so. This is such a gorgeous panel. I love this so much.
I was very impressed with it. And it's another one where And the cool thing is, and I'm going to talk about my artist a lot, and I don't know if he's going to like it enough. He's very shy. I actually wanted him on here with me because he had so much involvement in this comic, but he's shy. Which
so
I was
is
like,
this
fair
you
enough.
Right here?
Yes, it is. How'd you know? Love, the big bald love, fat guy.
I love how he's the nice one, too.
So that is another funny thing. So this is Paul. And that would be in the panel, you would see that it's Paul. But this is him just getting interrupted by Vincent. Paul is a real life character, a real life person. Vincent's brother, Theo, hired Paul. This is all real life. This is research I did. Hired Paul to take care of his brother because he was worried about him. So Paul was actually there to be more of like a caretaker and a helper. Mm-hmm. He, based on Van Gogh's accounts, he really didn't like Paul. And he basically Paul was very antagonistic and kind of was just there for the money. And so I wrote Paul, and this is where it's going to be funny. I wrote Paul in a way that was very antagonistic, very douchey, if I can say, just a jerk. And through language barriers, my artist read it as an endearing statement. And so he actually drew Paul as this like fumbling fool of a nice guy. And we're going through it. And I was like, I mean, Paul's face doesn't really match what he's saying there. He's saying like, hey, Vincent, sell any paintings tonight? Ha ha ha. I was like, that's what he's supposed to, you know, that's kind of like the feel of it is he's a jerk. And Gabriel's like, oh, I thought he was like, did you sell any paintings today? And he's like, he completely changed the character. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is not historically accurate, but I love it. And I was like, we were going to make Paul a bumbling idiot, and he's just going to be this really nice guy that just pisses Vincent off because he's useless and he's overly nice. And that, to Vincent, is nothing he wants in this world. And I was like, and you changed that character, Gabriel. Thank you. And I was
pleasant error, right? That worked out perfectly.
Perfect. I was like, it's so much better.
So what Easter eggs are we seeing in here? It looks like there's a handful of paintings.
Yeah, this is, once again, mostly on Gabriel's side. He looked through some of his concepts or some of his early paintings. I want to say the one directly above that like cutoff panel to the right. I think that I can't see. I'm going to fail to remember all the names because obviously he had a ton. But there are definitely some Easter eggs. We'll see a handful. And that's mostly the artist kind of throwing them in here and there.
That's cool though. That's awesome. And that right there, just the attention to detail.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. So this right here is Vincent home in the safety of his room, writing a letter to Theo, his brother. So this, we're not going to show any of it, obviously, but this was actually taken. I read about four or five of Vincent Van Gogh's letters. They're actually published and to his brother. So I read a handful of his letters in real life. That way I could take some of it and be like, okay, this is how he would say this. This is how he would say this. So anyway, so that's what fills this scene right here.
I just noticed him. Too, right here, is this like symbolism for like the panel breaking?
Yeah.
It's like little cracks.
It's technically from the outside of his window, his bedroom window.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense.
So that's the window pane right there and the crack in the window. Yeah. And then when you go to the next panel, next page, you'll actually see. So this is one of my favorite pages in the comic. So as you can see, that's the window pane that you the window that you were viewing through last time. This is a continuation of the letter. And this is another.
Dude, holy crap! Not to interrupt you, but the way he has like the light shining through the cracks—so
good.
That's freaking amazing, dude. I just noticed it because like we're super zoomed in, but like the cracks in the window, like, and he's having the lights go through. That's beautiful.
It is so well done, and I love the use of negative space of like his desk, the smoke billowing off of his pipe in that top one. Mm-hmm. This him just writing more. And then if you go down, like, it's just the change of day in the left panel right here, showing it's more of a dusk, like the sun getting ready to set, that beautiful orange. That is obviously him and Theo. Like, that's a picture of him and his brother that he's writing to currently. So it just gives a piece of that breathes it a little more life into it, and then he falls asleep after finishing the letter. I actually had that as my phone background for a while until it started making me depressed. That bottom right panel, I was like, man, this is so sad. But yeah, I love this page. And once again, real quick, this was another lapse in language. There's another language barrier. This was all supposed to be just the same night. So I was writing it as like, oh, he wrote it when he got home, the whole letter. Mm-hmm. But I was giving descriptives of like, he's here. All right, let's focus on the page of him or the picture of him and his brother. And then Gabriel showed me this, and basically he interpreted it as he spent the entire next day in his room, locked in his room, writing the letter meticulously to his brother. And so this shows a full day passing. And I was like, dude, come on. I was like, that's good. And that's all I said. I was like, that's really good. I was like, I appreciate it, because that's not what I originally wrote.
And then, so we are roughly right at page 10. I don't know how much of this you want to show.
We can show a decent amount of the beginning. Where it starts kicking off, we'll pull away a bit. That way we keep some of the action. But I don't mind showing some of it. There's Paul again being a bumbling idiot. And that was another one where he was supposed to be saying something mean, and he just wrote him in this big like hello, like almost like Swedish chef looking, like just this really nice guy, and I'm like, all right, I guess he's nice. So that was fun.
No, that's awesome how it works out as well. And I really love this interaction, like kind of just walking through the town like during the day and like kind of seeing how lively it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did really well with this one. And I liked that moment of happiness, just remembering children laughing, being carefree, that happens there. It's a nice, quick little, it's like the only time we see him smile. Mm-hmm. in the early half. We can show this next one. And I'll give you one more quick little Easter egg is that beautiful woman is my wife. In this comic, her name's Clementine. But I was like, we're going to make this lady my wife. And so I sent him a picture of my wife, and he drew Clementine after her. So that's another little Easter egg.
I love the interactions too. Just like how you both are in the comic and how you treat Vincent. Like, I just love how that works out.
Yeah. I was supposed to treat him very meanly, but we end up being very nice, both of us, which is good. So we can cut away from this. We won't show much more then, because there's a couple panels coming up that are kind of more spoilery, and I want to keep them.
Not a problem.
But if you want, why don't you here?
Nope.
Let's. If you want, can you? Because I don't think we have much in the way of that when it comes to dialogue. But I do want to show you one of the future panels real fast, that we can just see the shift in tone and color. In the all folder that I sent you, would you be able to open up page 27?
Yeah, let me go ahead and get that pulled up.
And then maybe that'll be the last one we show of the interior, just so we can keep some of it. So quick little, while you're pulling it up, page 27 is he is in the future. He has been taken, this is post, this is basically second half of the comic. Third act, basically. And this is where, like, basically the tone shifts.
Mm-hmm.
You can see the vibrancy and the colors that, like, the lens flare and everything, or lens glare and everything that my artist put into it. Obviously, I didn't remove some of the dialogue here because this wasn't originally supposed to be shown, but I did want to give, like, a hint at to what the second half's going to look like.
I really like to, like, you know, you got the fenced up door with the barbed wire, the mm-hmm. like the cement barricades and everything.
So those are all the not nice guys. And then,
so give us a little bit about the symbolism here. It feels like there has to be something here.
There is. If you're familiar with the, it's a fairly popular painting, I believe it's called hold on, I don't want to get it wrong. There it is, Creation of Adam. That's what I thought it was, but I didn't want to get it wrong. There's a popular painting called Creation of Adam by Michelangelo, and you might have seen it, but it's basically Adam and God, like touching fingers mm-hmm. like that. You've probably seen it somewhere, but that's that second to last panel is, was another kind of callback to that traditional art that I said, let's put in as much as we can. And this is obviously if you, by the flare of the dress and everything, this mm-hmm. is Marie Cassatt, our secondary character. This is when they get introduced.
That is awesome, dude.
She kind of saves them. But yeah.
That's all right, let's go ahead and get back to our main thing. So right now we had the opportunity to take a preview at this. When are you launching the Kickstarter? When can people expect the opportunity to back this book?
So we plan on launching it January 1st is kind of our goal. Right now we have, just being upfront, we have one page not colored yet because it's kind of the entire setting of the entire world. And it's very daunting for my artist, but once again, he can do it. And you've seen what he's done. Mm-hmm. It's going to be great, but he's taking his time. And I said, take your time. I said, make it great.
The pencils look phenomenal too.
Yeah, it's everything's been great. So I'm super happy with it. But so he's going to take his time with that. We're working on a special edition or a Kickstarter exclusive cover along with two covers by the actual artist. So those are in the works. But basically the comic's finished. Other than one page needs to be colored, the comic's finished. So our goal is January 1st to start the Kickstarter. So we're close.
Getting there. So everyone, be sure to give him a follow. Give a shout out to your Twitter. We have the Twitter handle in the description. But for everyone that's mm-hmm. just listening, where can people find you?
It's just Bent Box Comics. On Twitter, that's the main handle. How it sounds, BentBoxComics, Bentbox Comics. And that's pretty much our main page. We have an Instagram, same handle. Got lucky, it's not taken. So basically, if you Google us anywhere, Facebook, everything, our handle's the same on everything.
Awesome.
It wasn't taken, so we got lucky.
No, that is great. So, hey, before we wrap up things completely, Chris, I always love ending the podcast on a strong note, and that is asking for a little bit of advice for anyone who might be new and is listening. So for anyone that is watching and just having trouble getting motivated going with either just the writing or the art, what type of advice would you offer them to help them just get started?
So, I mean, I'm just starting out too. So I take my advice with a grain of salt. I want to be fair to you. That it's not like I'm endowing any wisdom, but for me, a lot of it was just right. As a writer, it was just right. There's times where I'm like, I have no idea what I want this page to say, what I want this character to say. Just put words down. Just do that. I was like, they don't have to be good. They could be hot garbage. You revisit it, and then you revisit it again, and then you get a nugget of inspiration, then you revisit it again. It's just constantly being persistent and not giving up on yourself and just working hard. That's all it mm-hmm. is. And secondly, I would definitely say, I mean, there are people out there so talented who are writing and drawing their own comics. I couldn't imagine the amount of time, energy, and effort that it takes to do that. You guys are gods among men. But for everyone else who's like, I'm an artist who wants to or I'm a writer who wants to hire an artist, you can find them anywhere. Like this, no offense, but this guy was very, just, it was a random guy that I reached out to who reached back, and he turned out to be incredible. He's an incredible artist. And so I would, that was one thing I also did, was I focused on what art style would suit the story I'm trying to tell. Mm-hmm. And obviously you can probably find a decent amount of that online. You can look through people's profiles and get a sense of how your comic's going to look. But yeah, just network with people, reach out. I'll never be afraid to ask for help. I'm sure there are some indie creators out there who are more, they have more of that starving mentality of like, mm-hmm. they don't want more indie creators. They want, you know, cause that's less audience for them, but don't worry about those people. Ask questions, ask for help, ask for collaboration. You know, we're all just hanging out, trying to have some fun and make some cool stuff. So,
yeah, absolutely. Hey, Appreciate it, man. That was awesome advice. I know you said you're kind of new in this, but I think that advice stands just as strong as all the other pieces of advice that I've heard from people who've been in the industry for years. So, I mean, my thing is you could always learn something from anybody.
Yeah.
Anybody. You could always learn something. Maybe you learn something that's, you know, hey, I'm not going to do that. That was a dumb move. You know, hey, everything's a learning opportunity in my
That's what
in
I learned
experience.
For real fast beforehand. That's where Unity saved my butt. John Shaw, and so many times where he was an indie creator who did his own thing, and he'll readily admit areas where he overlooked or failed or misstepped or anything like that, and he shared those with me, and I've had the opportunity to learn from that and not have those same pitfalls. So there's things where you can learn from anybody, and you know, we're all here to help. So always ask questions, always say, you know, you need help. Don't be afraid to do that. But yeah.
No, that is awesome. Everyone watching, thank you for tuning in. Chris, thank you for swinging by, breaking down Artificial,
no problem,
and giving us a deep look at the interiors too. That was awesome, man.
Great. I'm glad. Nice to be here.
Everyone watching, be sure to check out the description. Give Chris a follow. I hope you all are having a fantastic Friday, but most importantly, guys, keep it geekly.